Hello, I'm Rob Friedman, and welcome to Team Talk. On this week's episode, we're tackling the topic of cybersecurity and how we can protect ourselves from fraud. For this topic, I have with me Kara Suro, Vice President of External Fraud Surveillance and Investigations for Charles Schwab, and Ben Watson, our Technology Manager for Team Huens. Kara and Ben just held a live event on this topic just earlier today, and I want to invite them onto the podcast to give those who cannot make the event an overview of the most helpful tips that we discussed. So since, Ben, you're our resident IT and cybersecurity expert, I'm going to hand things off to you for the interview with Kara.
Thanks, Rob. I'm excited to be here today. I'm excited, Kara, for you to be with us. I think there's some really good information here, and we'll just get it kicked off. So with so many people working from home and so much sort of anxiety in the air and generally, you know, we've seen an uptick in scams. Kara, can you tell me about what you're seeing currently that fraudsters are using?
Yeah, thanks, Ben. So we have seen, in light of COVID, we've seen an absolute explosion of the fraud tactics that are being used by the criminals. They've always traditionally taken advantage of any sort of pandemic or emergency situation. So if you think of the hurricanes in the past, you know, they've taken advantage of that. But the situation is so unique, and there it's provided really a number of different avenues that the criminals can take in order to try and steal money from individuals, which is their goal at the end of the day. So I'll give you a couple of examples. You know, first and foremost, what we're seeing is an attempt to get information from individuals by sending out phishing emails. And what are described as phishing emails is they'll send a link that purports to provide information in an attempt to get people to click that link that takes them out to another site. So an example we've seen in the COVID era is an email that purports to have testing information. It'll say, find the latest COVID testing in your neighborhood. And a lot of people are looking for that information, right? Because it was really testing rolled out so slowly initially. So individuals will get this email. They'll think, great, we've got more testing in the neighborhood. I'm going to find out where it is. And they click on that link. They'll go out to what is a site set up by the criminals, but it looks to be a legitimate site that, you know, might have a couple of references to the CDC or maybe, you know, the state health organization. And then in order to get to where, to find out where those testing sites are, they'll ask for information. And this is where the criminals, this is their MO. So they'll typically ask for a name, first name, last name. They'll ask for an address, right? That's an easy give, especially if you're looking for testing in your neighborhood.
Yep.
They might ask for a phone number where they can contact you for additional information. But then they might also get greedy and say they need date of birth in order to figure out the best testing site based on, age ranges or something along those lines. They might try and get a social security number out of individuals. And what they're looking for is the most information they can get, because ultimately, they're taking that information to try and get access to financial institution accounts down the road.
So in that situation, what can I do? What can, you know, our clients do to protect against that?
So anytime you read and you receive an email that's unsolicited, I would say approach it with some skepticism. We've seen this incidents too, where phishing emails come in looking like a Schwab email. And it'll say that there's been an issue with your account. Please click on this link. And so individuals will click on the link. They think they're going to a Schwab site. And again, same issue where they're being asked to provide information. What we tell individuals is rather than clicking on any link that they receive in an email, go to the legitimate website. If you're looking for information from the CDC, go to cdc.gov. If you're looking for information on your Schwab account, go to schwab.com. We make it really easy. But again, you know, in those COVID instances, make sure that the sites that you're going to are the legitimate sites and don't click on the links. Don't rely on what you're receiving in email.
So it sounds to me kind of like when, your favorite, food product brand comes out and it's like new packaging, same great taste. That's kind of what I'm hearing with these emails, that it is, you know, it's new packaging. It's COVID-19, it's, you know, the pandemic, whatever anxiety and fear that we have going on right now. But same great taste, not great taste, obviously, with stealing clients' information, but it is that underneath the new wrapper, there is the same phishing, just trying to get information, preying on fear or greed or, you know, that urgency to get people to act.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. The criminals are very adept at playing on emotions. And so in a time like this, when emotions are running high, and there is, like you said, there's that fear and that sense of wanting additional information. The more information people get, the more secure they feel. And everyone's looking for an answer. Everyone's looking for that next vaccine. People want to get tested to make sure that they don't have it, or see if they have the antibodies. And so the criminals really they're adaptable and they take advantage of that. And so, yeah, absolutely. It is the same MO at the end of the day with brand new packaging.
So with that, you know, knowing that we sort of have this new packaging, can you take us through some of the other more common type of schemes, even maybe ones that go beyond just gathering information, but actually taking money, or just whatever is really the most common type of schemes?
Sure, absolutely. So one, the most popular, and it is not related to COVID or a pandemic or emergency, but it is very prevalent and has the greatest success rate for criminals, is the romance scam. And these are instances where the criminals will set up fake online profiles. They will begin to court individuals. They typically, again, playing on emotion, which they are so good at doing. But in this case, it's trust and it's loyalty and it's love. And they convince these individuals that they are in love with them. And they very, very quickly move through the stages of a relationship. But there's usually a catch. Typically, the story is that this individual is out of the country on a humanitarian aid, or working for a company that's out of the country. Often they claim to be in Africa, because then they say, well, we don't have very good connectivity down here. I don't have good cell service, which is a perfect excuse for not ever having to speak with the victim. They don't ever have to go on FaceTime or, Zoom with the victim, because they claim that they don't have good enough connectivity. And so all of the communications are conducted via email or occasionally text. And so that's with that additional layer, the criminals kind of keep the victims from detecting that they might be falling victim to a scam. But in these cases, typically, so if say they claim that they're in Africa, there will be some sort of an issue. Either they always say that they're coming home to be with their true love. Sometimes they say they're coming home to propose. And sometimes they'll just need money for a plane ticket. And so the individual will say, of course, I will send you money for the plane ticket. And they do. And then once they've gotten that, once they've gotten the person to open the pocketbook, so to speak, the criminals just continue to go for more and more and more. And then they will claim that their camp was attacked and they lost their passport and their laptop and all of their money. And they need more money to get a new passport and visa to get out of the country. And so that the victim will send money for that. And then there's another excuse, right? They have to pay taxes to get out of the country. And they'll keep this going as long as they can. And once either the money runs out or the victim begins to balk, the criminals disappear, but they're gone with the money. And what's really sad is, for my team, my organization does all of the fraud investigations, and we reach out to the banks where the money is gone, and we can pull that money back often, but time is always of the essence. And in these scam cases, individuals don't realize until much later in time that money was part of a fraud scheme. And so in many cases, by the time they let us know, the money's already left the bank that it went to. And oftentimes it's then even left the country, and it's very, very hard to get back.
Well, it seems like shame and embarrassment and even being heartbroken, frankly, these people thought that they had a relationship with them. Those would seem to be barriers to reporting. No one wants to admit that they got fooled. It happens to very smart people, very accomplished people. It's not a matter of, being uneducated or anything of that nature. It sounds like embarrassment, or a broken heart can keep people from reporting this, which can keep Schwab from being able to act in a timely manner, to recover those funds. Interestingly, I've heard of a semi-related scam, and I think it's got different names. I kind of know it as the the Patriot scam or the Soldier scam, where very similarly, an individual will purport to be a U.S. Service member stationed overseas, and, you know, people want to be supportive of our troops, and, you know, they will contact them and purporting to be a member of the military, you know, asks, oh, I need, you know, you can send me money for a phone card to call home or other things. And it will gradually escalate very similar to the romance scam of, I need money to fly home, or I can, you know, to send to my kids or do this. And so it's just, there is a shamelessness to, I think, a lot of the fraudsters. You know, if you think that there are areas where they won't try to take advantage of people, then you're wrong.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And we've seen that military scheme as well. And, you know, keeping with your theme of different packaging, yeah, it's the same scam, same underlying scam, different packaging. And they've got a huge playbook of schemes that they take from, and they're continuously evolving and adding to it. And, you know, COVID's a perfect example of that, where they just have new pages that they've added to the playbook to take advantage of that.
I don't want to make it seem like it's all doom and gloom out there. So I do want to talk about steps that we can take or that clients can take to protect themselves. First, I would like to talk a little bit more about, you know, when someone does become a victim of fraud, whether it is a romance scam, whether it is phishing, you know, no matter what type of fraud it is, what are some of the things that they can do, and really what are the first things that they can do, and what are the most important things that they can do?
Yeah, great. So first and foremost would be to contact your financial advisor, Team Hewins, and or to contact your financial institutions, because the quicker we get that information, the more likely we can get that money back if it's left our custody. Sometimes we've even had instances where clients have contacted us so quickly that the transaction hasn't technically left custody. It's in process, but it actually hasn't gone to the contrabank, and we've just been able to cancel it on our end, which is nice. Which is fantastic. But first and foremost, absolutely reach out to your advisor, reach out to your financial institution, let them know. Second, you'll want to fill out a police report with your local police department. You can sometimes use that for insurance purposes if you've lost money and we aren't able to get it back. But local law enforcement also, they are tracking any criminal rings that may be within their jurisdiction. And so your case may be one of many. And by filing that report, that may create the likelihood that you can get money back and that this ring may be taken down. The third thing you can do is file a complaint with the FBI, and their complaint website is ICC3.gov. They collect all fraud complaints there. And we have a number of ex-FBI agents who work here at Schwab in the Financial Crimes Group. And they have told us that site is scrubbed daily, multiple times a day, where they're looking at all of those complaints and they're running searches through them to see where the connections are. And so you may not necessarily hear back from the FBI, but do know that they are looking to make those case connections in order to try and bring down some of these larger organized rings. And we've had some success with cases that have started at Schwab, where we've notified the FBI and then gotten involvement from other financial institutions. And at the end of the day, the FBI brought that ring down, and they even extradited a few individuals and prosecuted them here, which was amazing. And then the last piece of it is to go to the credit bureaus and report the fraud incident. Or if you're a victim of identity theft, you also want to let the credit bureaus know so that they can flag your account. And then you can also freeze your credit, which is a really good idea to do if you are not going to need a credit card or taking out a loan for a house or a car or opening any sort of financial institution accounts. Freeze your credit. That means nobody else can open accounts or take out cards or loans in your name using your identity. And it's fairly easy to freeze. You call the credit bureaus and let them know. And then you can also unfreeze it if you do happen to be buying a house or a car or needing that credit for some reason.
Yeah, after the Equifax security breach, I think in 2017, we started working a lot with our clients to freeze their credit, and that's something that we continue to do today. So, any clients that are listening, definitely reach out to us if that's something that you're interested in. And I echo that it is. It's very important. It is very easy, and it provides a high level of protection against, well, opening new accounts and other, you know, other lines of credit for you. That is a great segue to other steps that people can take to protect themselves. You know, there's passwords, there's two-factor authentication, there's password managers, there's general suspicion. You know, I even talk to people about, you know, stop, think, then act, which is very difficult for all of us to do, as even just being a very initial thing to do. But can you talk a little bit more about what people can do to protect themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are a number of different things. And the more layers you have, the more protections you have, the better off you're going to be. You know, the criminals are going for the low-hanging fruit. They're multinational organizations, really. They are very much often structured like a company, where they've got their money mules and their interpreters and the ones that make the phone calls and ones that send the emails, the ones that pick up the money and deposit the money. But they also are a little bit lazy at the end of the day. And so they want to make the most money in the least amount of time with the least effort. And so they are going to go after the accounts that don't have that two-factor authentication that we talked about. So since I'm on that topic, I'll tell the audience a little bit about what that is. So two-factor is where you have an additional key or password to the password that you have to get into your account. So say you're logging into Schwab and you have your username and then you have your password, which is your safe and secure password. The two-factor is then you can either get a token or a soft token, which is an app on your phone, and it has a 6-digit number that counts down. And that changes every 30 seconds, that number changes. And so what you would do is you type in your login, you type in your password, and then you type in that 6-digit that shows up in that moment on your phone. You type in that 6-digit number, and that's your second factor of authentication. And then you go into your Schwab account. Very, very difficult for the criminals to get access to this, because when you register for the soft token, you're registering that device. So the criminals can't go out and use another device and get access to that soft token. What they also can't get access to it unless you're using public Wi-Fi, which we talked about on the webcast earlier, where if you're on public Wi-Fi, the criminals very, very easily hack that. And sometimes you may be on a public Wi-Fi that they've set up themselves. And in those cases, they could potentially tail you into the system. But again, it is much more difficult. So two-factor authentication is a really great, fantastic extra layer of protection. We also tell people to make sure that they're using unique logins and passwords across their different sites. And I am like the doctor that smokes. I will confess that I tell people to use different passwords and logins, but I use the same on certain sites, right? On Amazon and, you know, the Whole Foods site that some used to be different, Nordstrom, right? Or Macy's or whatever your shopping department is of choice. And frankly, if people want to see that I bought some glow-in-the-dark glue off of Amazon the other day for my kids, then have at it. But when it comes to my Schwab account, when it comes to my any, you know, tax accounts, any medical accounts that have that really, really crucial non-public information, it's going to have my date of birth and potentially my social security number, obviously my bank accounts, my brokerage accounts. And those, I have a unique login and I have a unique password and I use two-factor authentication. Yeah. And then, you know, Ben, as you mentioned, be wary and be vigilant. So don't act quickly. Take time. If you received an email, make sure it's an email from a known source or it's something that you're expecting. If you are conducting a transaction, say it's a real estate purchase, or you're purchasing a car and you receive email instructions, pick up the phone and verbally verify that with the escrow company or the real estate company or with the car dealership, and call a number that you know is a legitimate phone number for those firms to make sure that you are getting the accurate instructions. Check the dollar amount, check the bank account, check the routing number. Make sure you're doing all of that. And Team Hewins will do the same thing. If you ask them to conduct a transaction, you send them an email, these guys are going to call you and they're going to verbally verify that. And they're going to go through all of the aspects of the transaction and they're going to make sure that that was authorized by you. They're not going to act on that email, and you guys shouldn't do that either.
Exactly. Yeah. The calling to verify the transactions, that is just a huge point of emphasis for us. And, you know, all of our team members are empowered to stop that transaction without, you know, unless they've gotten that verbal authorization, and they know that they have the company standing behind them, you know, from a policy perspective, and saying, no, you know, if we don't have the verbal authorization, then, you know, if this smells bad, then, you know, we're not doing it. When it comes to passwords, you know, I would echo, you know, what you're saying about having the passwords for financial institutions, and also using a password manager. I use one in my personal life. It actually integrates into, you know, my different devices. So iPhone, it, you know, I can autofill passwords there, and really makes managing those, you know, very a lot easier. And so, yeah, those are all great tips there, and definitely things that I echo.
And Ben, one thing to note with the password managers that is becoming a more relevant feature and benefit is that we are seeing higher instances of malware being downloaded onto clients' computers. So this would be where they receive an email and they click to open a document, right? And some are sort of obvious and you're not going to fall for them, right? The invoice that comes out of nowhere for money that you owe. And, you know, I always posit those. I'm like, wait, what did I get? Okay. So delete and then delete from my deleted. But some of them look really legitimate. The criminals are getting really good at sending out emails that have these downloads. And what happens when the criminals or when the individuals click that link and they download that document, they are also downloading malware. And that enables the criminals to get directly through the malware into our client's computers. And then from there, they can access Schwab.com through, you know, some passwords that might be saved in the browser and various other websites and links. With the passwords, and the reason I sort of got on the subject of malware is there have been a number of instances lately where clients have somehow downloaded some malware onto their computer. And when they've attempted to go into their Schwab site, we've also heard about this with Amazon. We've heard about this with Apple. They've received a pop-up that's related to that malware. They then click the link, which they think is taking them in Schwab.com or Amazon.com or Apple.com, and they enter their login and their password. If they have a password manager and they click a link that is not taking them to the legitimate site, the password manager will recognize that. It won't flag a warning, which might be phase two for these password managers. It's a selling point. I'll have to call them up. But it won't autofill because the password manager will say, this isn't Schwab.com, this isn't Apple.com. I'm not going to, it doesn't recognize it. And so it doesn't autofill. So that's another bonus for having the password managers for sure.
Absolutely. No, and that's a great point is, you know, all of a sudden you're like, wait, why isn't this working? And that gets you to stop, to think, you know, and then to act. I think one of the other questions that I've heard about password managers is, you know, people, well, you know, you have this, like, what if the password manager gets hacked? And, well, that is certainly a risk. I think one of the things is that even if it does get hacked, the passwords themselves are encrypted, so they couldn't necessarily access the passwords. But you also, in the password manager itself, you have a list of all your passwords and can just go through, boom, 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 update those passwords, change to a different password manager if you want to. But you have a list of those passwords, so you can very quickly, boom, 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 go down the list of accounts and reset the passwords for those different accounts.
Yeah, that's right. And that is another benefit of those. Because in instances where you may be a victim of a hack, whether they've gotten into your email or gotten into one of the accounts that you have, you know, that you have access to, it's a good time to go in and change your passwords to all of your accounts, or at a minimum to your more secure accounts, right? Like, yeah. I mentioned earlier, your financial institutions, medical records, tax records, those types of accounts.
I would throw your social media accounts in there as well, your email and your social media accounts, you know, whether you're using the, you know, login with Facebook button, or, you know, for most of our accounts, probably our email address is our login. So someone just needs, if they have access to your email, reset password, they've got access to most other things. But that's where it comes back to what you were saying before with sort of the defense in depth. You know, you have different passwords for different sites. You're paying attention. You have multi-factor authentication enabled. You're using a password manager. You know, all of these different pieces sort of working together helps to stop different things at different times. And, like you said, criminals are lazy. And if you make it hard for them, they're going to go on to something else. I guess it's probably 20, 25 years old now, but the club that people used to put on their car, right? You can get, like, a determined thief can get through the club that's on your car, but you know what? Why, if they can just go to the next car, why would they? Make it hard for people, I think, is also where it comes in. And, you know, you can make it easier for yourself at the same time, frankly, by using some of these tools to make it harder for other people.
That's right. I love that analogy, because my car had the club on it and was stolen. Now, I'm dating myself a little bit, because this was in 2001. Yep, Honda Accord, most stolen car in the world, and had the club, which did absolutely no good.
That's fantastic. I mean, not, but it's funny.
Yeah, makes for a good story.
Any other information that you want to share? Any other security, tips or tricks or anything as we wrap up here?
I think I just want to hark back to what you said earlier about just being vigilant. Stop, pause, think, question any email, any phone call. When you're trying to go to a website, if you can, type in the address of that website. Don't Google it. So easy to end up on the wrong website and to end up on a website that's controlled by criminals who are just going to try and steal your information. So really, as we've seen these fraudsters pivot and focus their attacks more and more on the individual rather than the financial institutions, it's becoming even more vigilant for clients and for folks out there to make sure that they are being vigilant and asking those questions, adding those extra security layers around their accounts, and making sure that they're letting us know as quickly as possible if they have become a victim of fraud.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your time and this valuable information. I think our listeners are going to really get a lot of benefit from this. And I want to remind listeners that they can visit schwab.com/SchwabSafe for information on the Schwab Security Guarantee. Now we can all work together to protect your accounts. If you have any questions for our guests or feedback on this episode, please email me at robf@teamhuens.com and we'll do our best to answer your security questions. Thank you all. Team Talk is produced by Team Huens, counselors to family wealth. For more information about our advisors and our services, please visit teamhuens.com. Thank you. The content on this podcast is for informational purposes only. It should not be taken as legal, business, tax, or investment advice, or be used to evaluate any investment or security. This podcast does not constitute a solicitation to enter into any investment agreement with Team Hewins. For more details, please visit teamhewins.com/terms of use.